Hey, it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Guys, enjoying the blue skies. I will never take it for granted again. I won't. Clean air, walk outside, I can go get the mail and look up, and I can feel alive. There was a stretch there, and I think a lot of us were in it together, where you walked outside and the AQI, the air quality index, was like 350 or 500, and I think it literally was a breath of fresh air over the weekend as the skies cleared in a lot of areas in this state. There are people who are in need of help, and you can go to baldfacetruth.org to give to the Oregon Wildfire Family Fund. You can also see some of the recipients of the grants that are starting to be distributed. We'll update that with even more. I'm in touch with the mayor in some of the small cities in southern Oregon, and also in touch with Parks and Recreation, not Parks, but the Oregon Parks Department, that has got a lot of people who were displaced who remain camping on campgrounds across the state. They have nowhere to go back to, and we're trying to get in touch with some of the shelters as well to reach people directly. Go to baldfacetruth.org if you want to make a donation. Donations continue to trickle in. We will not stop taking donations until you stop making donations. How about that? Matt Prehm of 24/7 Sports is with us. He's breathing fresh air. What will you take it for granted again? Blue skies? Will you ever take that for granted?
Oh, no. No. I just like you, I took my dog on a walk this morning, and it was a cool, crisp morning, and I could see the sky, and I actually walked right past some deer, and it's like it felt normal again. And I won't take that for granted. You know, we oftentimes, you know, in Oregon, are spoiled with how awesome our weather is, and for a short period of time, you know, we were delivered awful weather, and it was, we couldn't go outside. And for some people, like you just said on your intro, you know, there's people whose lives are still being impacted, even though that, you know, you and I, for the most part, we're back to normal.
I appreciate that perspective, and I know that there are people across the state that are hurting and looking for help. I hope that people continue to give. Over the weekend, we got a breath of fresh air when it came to sports as well. All right, what was your? I mean, so much was going on: NBA, golf, yeah, NFL, college football. What was? Give me like your two highlights from the weekend, Prehm.
Oh, highlights would probably have to be NFL related. I don't know what it is. I'm not into college football. Maybe it's because the team I cover isn't playing, and games are being postponed and whatnot. Maybe when the SEC starts playing this weekend and we have three of the, you know, five Power Five conferences playing, I'll be more in tune with it. I did watch a little bit of Georgia Tech, UCF, but I wasn't. My Saturdays were not typical. Sunday, I was glued to my TV. The first part of the day was watching all the injuries and just how awful that was. And maybe that's probably my first one of just how important is preseason football. I mean, we were just talking about how we will never, you know, take for granted blue sky. Maybe we should never complain about the lack of preseason football games. You know, all those injuries are just awful. That was the first one for me on Sunday. And then the second one, obviously, the afternoon with Justin Herbert becoming the starter for the Chargers, and not only just starting, which was a big deal, it's kind of frantic pace of, oh my gosh, what's he going to do now? to then becoming a case where it's this dude isn't just playing and starting and doing okay. Herbert's playing like a, you know, statistically speaking, week two, a top 10 quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I watch him, and we've all seen him make those throws, right? I mean, that back left corner, the end zone throw, and also him putting the ball down and running a couple times. He made those throws. I saw a couple deer in the headlights moments, but given that he didn't have this big preseason, and he is relatively, I mean, this is a young guy. I thought it was like a home run appearance. Now, I don't know about you, Preem, but I was secretly delighted when his coach came out and said, hey, he's not the starter this week. I think that's good for him.
I think it's probably good for him to continue to sit and absorb and watch and learn. But at the same time, John, like I watched week one. I don't know why. I think I was really interested in seeing Joe Burrow and how he would do for the Bengals. And then I wanted to see, you know, how good Tyrod Taylor was for the Chargers. But watching week one Chargers offense to week two Chargers offense, I don't know how you put Tyrod Taylor back in there unless you are totally content with not winning football games. And Tyrod Taylor's not this team, they're not a Super Bowl contender. And so what is Herbert sitting for then? If you're not a Super Bowl contender, Why are you sitting if Herbert's ready to go now? I mean, I watched that game, and I put it on Twitter in a joking manner. Like, Herbert didn't take reps during practice week, you know, going into the week, and he is making an audible and reading his play sheet on his wrist because he probably isn't 100% sure of what he's calling, and so he's literally looking at it while under center while making an audible, and it's like if he performs in that manner without having any kind of reps, why would you not start? Why would you not? The timelines change in sports. We figured that out a long time ago. And I think in my mind, the plan going into the year was sit Herbert for a year, and then we'll see what they've got. But he's played one game against the reigning Super Bowl champs, against the reigning MVP, and went toe-to-toe with them without any prep. Why not go now?
I want him to have success, and I keep looking, like, remember Marcus Mariota and his debut? I mean, it was a smashing success, and then over time you realize Titans just not built to to win on a consistent basis.
I think the difference here, though, is the Titans didn't have the offensive weapons that the Chargers do. Keenan Allen and Mike Williams are two of the better receivers in the NFL. Hunter Henry is one of the better tight ends in the NFL. And Austin Ekeler is a proven commodity at running back that can run and catch. And then it's looking like Joshua Kelly, the backup, is more than competent to be kind of the second guy in the rotation there. Whereas I look at the Titans thinking, when I saw them, I looked at them and thought, Marcus, it was, oh boy, he doesn't have an offensive line and he doesn't have any skill guys around him. Herbert, I can't speak to how good his offensive line is. They didn't play without their starting right tackle week two against the Chiefs. But there were some pressures on him, but he's got tools around him. And a lot of the stuff that he did in week two was checkdowns to Austin Ekeler. He had a couple of those, went for big gains. He connected with Hunter Henry, the tight end, on some checkdowns. And then he found out, wow, this is what life is like with really good receivers, because Keenan Allen bailed him out, you know, of some really impressive catches. And I think the Chargers, their offense is set up for success way more than what Marcus inherited with the Titans.
Matt Preem, 24/7 Sports, is with us. I reached out to Joey Harrington last night. I said, what do you think? He said, I especially asked him about the play where Herbert and the running back appeared to go one way, everybody else was going the other way.
Yeah.
It was Joey's thought that Justin Herbert probably called the wrong formation in the huddle. He said, running back, quarterback, we're going the same direction. It's not like Herbert just turned the wrong direction. But he said, that's a rookie mistake. He didn't win the game, ultimately. How much did that sour the day that they didn't close the deal?
I think a little bit. I think if you talk to the people in that franchise, they probably would speak more of the importance of the win, the loss happening, and more less than what Herbert did individually. But from nationally perspective, you know, I don't see really anyone out there hammering the Chargers for not losing or for not winning that football game. It was more about, wow, look how good Herbert was in an emergency start with no prep. So I don't think nationally it's really changed anything. And, you know, he had his mistakes. That interception was out there, but late in that, early in the fourth quarter, I think that led to a touchdown drive by the Chiefs. But I go back to the coaching. I felt like the coaching is the bigger issue. Not going for it on fourth down and overtime was awful because you knew the Chiefs were going to go down and score. You needed to keep trying and see if you get that first down. I also think in regulation, Anthony Lynn made a major mistake. You referenced it, the third down play where it looked like Herbert was going one way, the running back was going the other. They ran three straight run plays inside, I think, the Chiefs' 6-yard line. They didn't once try and throw the football. And if it was me, I would have ran the ball one time, see if he could get in, and then try and let Herbert try and score a touchdown, throwing the football, because you know 2 minutes to go in the game, Kansas City's going to get at least a field goal, which they ended up getting. Had they scored a touchdown there, the game may have not gone to overtime. It wouldn't have gone to overtime because the Chiefs either would have had to score a touchdown to win by one, or San Diego, the Chargers hold for a 1-point win.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, is with us. Love Tony Romo's performance, by the way. He might have been the best quarterback in that game.
He loved Herbert.
Yeah, and I just think Romo's so interesting. He's like, you know, it's like watching
a game. He calls the plays perfectly.
Yeah, it's like having him. It's like he's not even broadcasting. He's just sitting there watching with you, which I really enjoy. I don't get the feeling that there's a barrier between he and the audience. Prehm, Pac-12, you know, there's a lot of discussion about will they play, won't they play. I've got numerous people telling me October 31st will be the date. They'll decide on Thursday. How do you feel about that?
I'm excited they're going to try and play. I'm excited that health cautions some of the concerns with the health of, and how they're going to treat COVID-19 and get through that. Some of that has been finalized or figured out or better understanding of how they're going to go about doing this. That's reassuring to know that they're not going to rush through things. I appreciate being, you know, candid and making sure and that everything's going to be okay. But at the same time, I feel disappointed. I feel let down in the Pac-12 because they feel like a follower when they call themselves the Conference of Champions. They hype up, you know, that they're a Power 5 school, and it's becoming clear, I feel like, every few weeks that the league is literally just sitting on its hands, it feels like, and waiting for the Big Ten to do something, and then that springs them into action. Oh, well, the Big Ten is looking into playing. Well, let's try and look into play. Oh, well, the Big Ten is shooting for October 24th. Can we try and get ready to go by October 24th? 2 weeks, what was it? What has it been? 2 or 3 weeks since the Cadell announcement was made. For the medical testing on a daily basis on every campus for every sport. Like, why did the league not come out that day and say, you know what, we're gonna try and play earlier than January 1st. We're gonna try. We don't know when it's gonna be, but we're gonna try. I know Larry Scott came forward and said that they feel more optimistic about playing earlier, but he didn't come out and physically say these are the steps that we're doing. This is what's next for us to be able to play early. We want to do this. We need to get here. And it just really feels like they want to be a Power 5 conference. They want to have this all the same respect as everybody else. But at the same time, it also feels like they're not doing anything until someone else decides, hey, we're going to do it. It's now clear. Here we go. Okay, now we'll dive in. And that's not how it should be. You need to be cautious. You need to take the precautions that are necessary. You need to do your research. You need to do your thought process and form your committees and run through all the scenarios and figure out how you're going to handle all that stuff. And you need to wait and see how it plays out maybe in another conference or what have you. But at the same time, you need to have some kind of a plan of action that you guys decide, not just sitting and waiting for another school or another conference like the Big Ten to come out and say, we're playing, to kick everything into gear. That's honestly, how it's being presented of how it feels like. The conference is just waiting for the Big Ten to do something, and then they'll spring into action. And it's showing that this is a dog-eat-dog world. And it's fair or not, everyone's out for themselves. And the Big Ten and the Pac-12, Pac-12 thought they were in agreement with the conference, Big Ten conference, when they postponed. The Pac-12 then sent home all their players. Meanwhile, the Big Ten kept their players on campus. Some of them were practicing 11-on-11 last week. And they're prepared now to be able to play earlier because of that. And the Pac-12 sitting here thinking, well, wait a minute. We were just following what you guys were doing, and here we go. You guys can play earlier? Like, it's just frustrating. I'm happy. I'm excited for potential football. But at the same time, I feel like, did Oregon, did other schools, did they lose out on players opting out because of the uncertainty, because the conference wasn't, you know, fully up to speed and wasn't, you know, in constant communication with all the schools?
Yeah, I think they look unprepared. They look like they don't have a plan. They look like a follower. If they start October 31st, which is where most of the campus and conference sources think they're going to land, they could play seven, and then on December the 19th, you would have seeded games. It would be one versus two, three versus four. So everyone ends up with eight games played. If you play eight and somebody's 8-0, are they in the playoff?
Oof. If the Big Ten or if the SEC sends like a, well, they're playing 10 games. So they'd have an 11-0 champion or 10-1 champion, most likely. I have a hard time seeing the Pac-12. If they play seven games plus an eight-seeded game to get into the playoffs, even if they're 8-0, and the SEC's got a 10-1 team, and then the Big 12's got a 10-1 team, the Big 12 has a 10-1 team. The Big Ten has maybe a 9-0 team, and then the ACC, Clemson, you know, they go 11-0. It's hard to justify eight. I think the Pac-12's best chance to send a team to the playoff is the College Football Committee being forced, for whatever reason, to push back their final ranking, which I believe is December 21st. They have to be pushed back to, let's say, early January or mid-January to do the final release, because conferences across the country need extra makeup dates and not enough teams played and what have you. And that allows maybe the Pac-12 conference one or two extra weeks to throw in some games late in the season, push back the conference championship game a couple weeks, and now all of a sudden your conference champion is 10-0 or 9-1 or 11-0, and you've gotten a bigger schedule than what you're originally planning of seven or eight games.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, you're the best. Breathe that clean air and stay safe, my friend.
I appreciate it.
There he is, and I think he's right. If the College Football Playoff, which Sunday, December 20th is their selection day, they'll pick the semifinalists, they're tied to the January 1st date for the semifinals, but could they push that back a week? It would really depend on television. Our Big Splash is coming up. Talk some NFL and NBA in the 1 o'clock hour. Valerie Cleary of Portland State, the athletic director there, will be joining us in the 1 o'clock hour as well. Daniel Popper of The Athletic, who covers the Chargers, will be joining us. I want to take a phone call here. Jim's in Eugene. Jim, what's on your mind?
Hey, John, I think I got the easy solution. This is probably the most upward solution to the whole college football thing. As you increase the thing to 8 teams, if you're going to have playoffs for conference championships, et cetera, just increase the whole thing to 8 teams, include 8 teams in it, and then start the playoffs earlier than normal, and you'll end up with, I think, an honest and good solution to this year's problem.
I would solve the problem. I will make you commissioner of all of college athletics, problem being that the current college football playoffs media rights holder is ESPN, and they're only halfway through a 12-year deal that'll pay $7.2 billion to the college teams. By the way, that's $475 million per year from ESPN to the 130 FBS schools. So, yes, they'll expand. That discussion won't happen until 2022, and the actual expansion will not happen until 2025. Bank on it. That's when the ability to expand the playoff happens, and ESPN is not going to give that money back or tear up that contract. So there you go. There's no ability to expand. I wish we could, because we'd do it today. We'd just say, hey, everybody's going to play six games, and let's take 16 teams, and then we'll seed them. That would be a great solution, except ESPN won't go along with that, nor will...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.